This week in tennis.
Hey, Craig, 1 week until the U.S. Open. Are you excited?
Even though I'm not going, yeah, I am excited. I have kind of thought about seeing if I can get some tickets this year, go for a walk around, enjoy some of the atmosphere, and I recommend anybody who's listening who can do that. But yeah, I'm absolutely excited. There's a lot of interest this year. It's going to be real tough to pick a winner on either side. Big time of year. It's going to be great. A great 2 weeks coming up.
I think it's going to be fantastic. It's my favorite time of the year, as you know. We had a great time there in, 2015? And, maybe we'll do it again one day. We'll see. But if you are planning on going to New York City, just remember, it's not the same New York City that your parents remember. And you'll be fine. But I got to tell you, I'm excited for Coco Gauff. Very excited.
Well, she won a women's equivalent of the Masters just last night, which is a big step for her. She's not even 20 years old yet. So this going into New York, this has got to be generating quite a lot of excitement, right?
I would think it is. You know what? There's not too many Americans to get excited about. But she's won. I'm really happy for her. She's had a great summer, right? A great summer. She won Washington. Now she's won Cincinnati. That was an incredible match. Muhova didn't serve too well. But, you know, and she's a 12-1 favorite, or underdog, I should say, to win the U.S. Open. I don't think she's going to win the U.S. Open, but it's very encouraging, and you can see that Brad Gilbert, she's brought Brad onto the team, and he's probably helped her a lot. What do you think about that whole thing? Brad Gilbert, that was an interesting choice, but looks like the right one.
Well, as you said previously on the show, he knows how to help players to win, maybe not through improving them technically. He's not fixed the forehand, but he's helped her to scramble her way to wins where perhaps she was losing before. That's what he brings. His autobiography, they call it Winning Ugly, I believe. It was part and parcel of what he did. So maybe that's something that Coco needed to learn at this stage of her career, is that sometimes you don't have to be the best player technically, but you can get there by being tough and by being difficult to beat.
Well, that's a good way to put that. You know, Brad's going to the one thing that I do know is that Brad is going to be nonstop 24/7 information. He's going to give her an overwhelming amount of information at times. I would think that the long-term success of this will depend on if Coco and how she processes that information. Is she going to be able to do like Andre Agassi did and say, hey, Brad, come on, I only need one or two things? Because he will bombard her, because that's what he does. That's how he made his money. That's how he made his mark in the world of tennis, by winning ugly. He had one of the ugliest games I've ever seen. I remember him from juniors. He wasn't very good, but he got to number four in the world by winning ugly. And the only thing that, the other thing I should say, and this has probably helped Coco too, is Brad doesn't work with, how do I put this, marginal players. He works with players who have the ability to win a grand slam, to already be there when he connects with you and take you to the next level. You know, Andre won Wimbledon 92. With Nick Bollettieri as his coach. But he helped guide Roddick to the 2003 U.S. Open. He's worked with Mary Pierce. He worked for a short time with Andy Murray. He's been around. He's a stable guy. He's got a good family. His wife is part of the team. She kind of works with them on how they eat, for example. Little things, you know, without actually being on the team, if you know what I mean. But what is going to be her breaking point? Because she's probably never had this much information given to her. It's obviously worked out. She has beaten every single player this summer that she was supposed to beat. And the one loss was to Jessica Pegula in Montreal. That was a tough three-setter. And she beat Iga. So she's on her way, but at 12-1, and it'll be much higher by the time Friday rolls around. Craig, do you take a stab on Coco winning the U.S. Open pre-tournament?
We're back to the age-old question of who is the standout star in women's tennis, because there isn't really one. Swiatek's kind of popped up, but other than Swiatek, you can't go with any certainty to say that one of these girls will even be in a semi-final or a quarter-final. I just find playing on the winner at a women's slam a ridiculously difficult thing to pick compared to picking the winner in a men's slam. You probably have a good idea ahead of time who three of the semi-finalists in a men's slam are going to be, so it gives you a very narrow field to pick from. You're picking from perhaps three, maybe four, five, six names. On the women's side, you could be picking from 30 different names who's going to win that slam.
You're right.
Is Gauff any less likely to win it than anyone else? No, that's certainly true. But at the price you're getting, I think the price is weighted in favor of the bookmaker because of the popularity of Gauff. The fact that she's won a few tournaments recently is also going to go sort of against that price. I'm probably inclined to pick someone around about 25-1 as an outside bet because I think they offer me the same value as I would get on Coco. She hasn't won one yet, remember. She's been to the final, but she's not won one. Is this going to be her time? I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced the US Open this year is going to be the one where she makes a breakthrough. I think actually we're going to see a different slam winner here, and we may come to that when we look at the draw. But I've just got a feeling the US Open's that kind of place where you're going to see a different slam winner. You're not going to be a name that you've seen previously lifting a slam. So I'm inclined to say no, I'm not going to back, personally not going to back Coco Gauff. It sounded like you weren't personally going to be backing her, but there may be value there for some people who want to ride that train.
Well, absolutely, and it's not a bad train to hop on right now. She's the hottest player on the women's tour for the hardcourt summer season. Her serve was booming. You know, that's a big part of her game. If she gets that first serve working, she's good. But I want to see what the draw looks like. Because you know as well as anyone that winning a big tournament like this and then playing right after, you know, you can have a letdown. So we're going to have to see what she has in store for her before we go there. But you're right. The WTA is the most difficult. There could be 20 girls who wins this tournament or someone who's not even on the board like Emma Raducanu. So you never know, right? You just never know. But while we're on the women's topic, you know, there are some players who fit your category, your list of possible winners in the 25-1 range. One of those players is Jennifer Brady at 33-1 plus 3,300 on your odds maker board. Jennifer Brady looked really good her first couple matches. She didn't look so good in Cincinnati. That was one of the few wins I actually had last week, was picking against her. But this is the type of tournament that she could come out and really fire away at. She's got the big serve. And from what I have heard, and I have not been to the U.S. National Training Center in over a year, but I heard the courts are playing very similar to what they're playing at or what they were like in Cincinnati. So you're looking at some bouncy courts. And that's going to probably not favor Brady, even though she has a big serve. Would you take a smash at Brady?
No, it's not a name that I've been looking at potentially, but I just don't think the game fits. I'm also I'm cautious of picking someone American as well, because I think the pressure might get to an American player. There might be a little bit more of an expectation to replace the gulf that has been left by Serena Williams. I'm not entirely sure that I'm going American for this one, but as you said, like, she might be one of those 20 or 30 players that are in with a shout, but personally, I just don't think the whole environment, the courts, the fact it's in the US, that makes me not want to play Brady.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. I would love to see her as an underdog in one of the first couple rounds if she gets past the first, because she does have the kind of game, the type of game that can turn your lights out on a hard court. So I like her a little bit. We'll have to see. But she's someone who could probably pull off an early upset, especially if she plays at night. What about another? I know you're not fond of pre-tournament local heroes, but what about Madison Keys? She's had lots of success in New York City. She's a 40-1 favorite or underdog to win the U.S. Open. She's had a spotty summer. What about Madison Keys? Is this the tournament where if she doesn't pull it off or pull off something like second week, is it time to start like maybe closing the chapter on the Madison Keys winning a major?
Well, I've already closed that.
Okay.
She just looks to me like she'll get a good run to a quarterfinal, maybe a semifinal, but she doesn't look like the type of player that when she gets there, she's going to blow somebody away. I mean, I thought she played really well at Wimbledon. She played against the kid Andreeva, and I was watching her play that match out of court 12. And Andreeva was dominating her, and Keys managed to turn it around and win it. And I thought, you know, the way she's played on the grass at the minute, she could have a real chance at winning this Wimbledon if she plays like that every match. But then she comes out next match and it looks really, really flat again, which is how she kind of looked at the start of the Andreeva match. I just see that every time I see Keys. One minute it's gold, the next minute it's copper. It's just so hot and cold. If she can hit a hot streak and keep that running for seven matches, then you can win a Grand Slam. That's true of anyone. But she doesn't have that. She seems to go through hot streaks where she looks unplayable, but it lasts a match or two, and then it's lights out. She'll come out, play flat, get eliminated. I just don't see how she puts all the pieces together with the consistency long enough to win a slam. I mean, the winning ugly might be the answer for her. If she could get through the first three to four rounds winning ugly, then she hits the hot streak come the quarterfinal. That would be exactly what she needs. But she tends to get embroiled in a bit of a battle early on in slams. And then by the second week, she just doesn't look like she's got the gas to go all the way.
Nope, I think you're right. The chapter is probably closed, but she could also be someone that you can consider for a early round underdog. She'll probably be one. She could end up having a tough draw. Someone else I was thinking a little bit about is Ludmila Samsonova. You know, she's a 25-1 underdog here to win the event in New York City. She has the game to do so. I think that she had some bad luck in Toronto, having to play twice in one day, and other things like that. But she has just as good a chance outside the top four or five as anyone else, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to recommend anyone to bet any of these players today. But if you get through, say, three rounds and you're into the second week and you see those names sitting there, you should still get a pretty good price on a player like that, because you're going to have a lot of players in there who are higher favorites than them. So there may be a lot of value in waiting a week, see how they play in the first week. If they're still there come Sunday, then you might want to come in on, it's not going to be as good a price as you were getting week one, but you're still going to get a good price on that player winning the next four matches and winning the slam. So that's kind of how I'll probably be looking at the women's draw, is I'll wait until after a week, see what's sort of left in that draw, and then have a look at what prices I'm being offered.
That's very sage advice. I think you're right too. Mira Andreeva, she's getting a lot of noise surrounding her. and rightly so. She's fun to watch. She drew Venus Williams in Cleveland for Monday, but Venus is not in the event. She joined or got a wild card at the last minute on Friday, went to practice on Saturday, and hurt her knee. So she's in doubt now for the U.S. Open. But Andreeva is an interesting character at 33-1. I don't think this is the year for her. She's a big favorite in Cleveland, by the way, but plus 650. So you can get some good value on her to win in Cleveland. But this one here, I'm not so sure she's going to go as far as some want her to, because there's a lot of pressure on her when there shouldn't be. So, but 33-1 is not a bad shout. And if she can get into the second or third round, you know, and you look at that draw and see what's happening, she might be the play. You have any kind of love for Andreeva?
I do. I'm just cautious of betting her because I know she's 16. She's a right. bit of a hothead, but I also know that, like, she's, because of her age, she could only play a certain amount of events, and she hasn't played since Wimbledon. She looked pretty good against Wimbledon at Wimbledon, actually. I mean, even when she lost the keys, she looked pretty good. But I don't want to jump on the train too early. I mean, she could turn, obviously, she's going to play this week. I think she's playing, is it Corpatch today?
Yeah.
Which, you know, that'll be an interesting match because she's not obviously played Cincinnati or out at Montreal. So it'll be interesting when she comes into New York. I think the problem a lot of players will have against her is there's not going to be a huge number of tapes out there of her play, and she's going to come in there a bit like Raducanu, and you're going to have to deal with her game. You're going to have to figure her out while you play her because there's not going to be a lot of footage to look at to get a hold of what she's doing. So definitely going to be one that's worth backing in the first few days. I think her ranking's gone, like, for a 16-year-old, I think her ranking's shot massively up. I think she's, like, ranked 70-something on the tour already, which, yeah, at 16 years old, that's pretty impressive.
That's very impressive, and she doesn't get to play a full schedule either. That's why you didn't see her in Toronto and Cincinnati. She waited to come over and play in a tournament she could do well in. They've organized her schedule very well. You know, they've done a good job, I think, of keeping the hype train at a minimum. I mean, it's hard not, in this day and age with social media, it's hard to keep secrets out there. We'll see what she does. I love her game. She's very precocious, kind of like a more talented version of Leila Fernandez. You know, she doesn't stop. She doesn't stop coming at you, no matter what the score. She's not, and she doesn't go away. You know, so it should be real interesting. Is there anyone else on the WTA side that you like as a possible dark horse that we haven't mentioned?
Well, we could probably sit here and talk about 20, 30 different players. The one that you've not mentioned, and I've been kind of cold on her for a while, is Maria Sakkari.
Yes.
I just think nobody's talking about her anymore. This might be the time when nobody's talking about you to do so, because she's not playing bad tennis. She's doing okay. She didn't do too well over in Canada, but she had a decent week there in Cincinnati. She had a good win in the early round against Sostea. Then she was kind of nudged out by Muchova, but it was a close match. It was definitely competitive. Maria, you know as well as I do, Maria could turn it on when she needs to, and she could actually she could win it. She's been to the semifinals. She could win it.
Yep, she could. She has been to the semis, and she's got one of the best serves on tour, especially her second serve. Her kick serve's like a guy's. It jumps. You know, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking you were someone else, and you brought up this point to me earlier. Should we be warning people off on Jabeur?
Oh, for sure.
And well, you want to tell people why? Because you spotted it. I didn't spot it because I wasn't watching, but you spotted the problem when she was playing the other night.
She's got a problem with her foot, a real one, and a problem with her calf. You know, when she's African and she missed Dubai, that little circle there with an injury, and that's serious business because she wanted to play in Dubai. She wanted to be there and represent Tunisia and to be the host, if you will, of those events. But when she was winning 3-1 and she called for the trainer, and I thought for sure she was going to come out of this and win the match. I honestly did. They worked on the underneath her foot. There was a problem there. She had twisted it, right? And then like 2 games later, they came back out. It was a different injury. Now they were working on the calf, the same one that she injured before. You know, that's going to be difficult. The other problem with Jabeur is that she doesn't have the confidence in her ground strokes that she used to. She came up with some big strokes on Saturday. Don't get me wrong. You know, that was a good match against Sabalenka. That was tough as hell for her. But at the end of the day, if you're punching, if you can punch her out with a serve, you got her, because she's just not going. But she's not moving at all. I mean, Craig, she went from to a dead stop almost. And that's not Ons Jabeur. Ons Jabeur, you know, you can say whatever you want about her unorthodox stroke sometimes, but she's not someone who quits. And she's not someone who walks off the match and says, you know what, I'm hurt. She had legitimate tears in her eyes because she knew she could have beaten Sabalenka, and I think she could have too. But this is a serious issue, so you have to stay away from her. I would expect her to go out in the first round if she shows up at all, because that didn't look good at the end.
Well, as you said, we're a week away, so it'll be interesting to see whether she feels like she's fit enough to play. Definitely, I'm having seen that after you told me about it. I'm not looking to play Jabeur at this tournament. In fact, if she shows up first round, I'll be probably playing against her.
Well, that's just it. That's what we'll probably do. But we'll get that draw out on Friday. We'll have something before the event starts, probably Monday morning maybe or something. But yeah, that's a good wrap for the ladies, for the dark horses, for that. We already know what we're looking at. We're looking at Iga. We're looking at Aryna Sabalenka. Perhaps Coco Gauff, maybe Jessica Pegula, kind of getting through there. Maybe somebody new, like Craig says, maybe a Kudermetova or someone similar to that. But the men's side of things, now that seems to be a little clearer. Sunday's final with Djokovic and Alcaraz was phenomenal. You know, these are the kind of matches you don't bet pregame, you bet live. You could have got Novak Djokovic at one point, 45-1. 4-1. You could have gotten Alcaraz at 5-1. That was a banger, though, but as you said before the show, maybe Novak got his number, and maybe this is going to keep him from winning the U.S. Open.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting dynamic, because a lot of people are now going to be playing Carlos Alcaraz based upon the fact that he beats Djokovic in that final at Wimbledon. But we still have to remember that Djokovic has won 2 slams this year. That's a big thing. But the most recent one, Alcaraz obviously winning, has a lot of people suddenly backing him, and I'm sure he'll be down as a massive favorite for this event. But I thought Alcaraz maybe was a little naive in actually allowing himself to go into that final with Djokovic in the event ahead of the US Open, because this is the only tournament Djokovic has played in the US. He wasn't allowed to go and play in Canada because of the rules they have there. But putting yourself in a situation where you've got to face the guy who is your biggest rival before you get to the big dance, it's an interesting dynamic, because the question after Wimbledon is, what does Djokovic have to do to beat Alcaraz? Because Alcaraz looked like he had every shot. He had the movement, he had all the shots to stop Djokovic. But now things have kind of swung back, because Djokovic has beaten him now. He's had a good look at his game. He didn't just beat him. It looked like Alcaraz should have won. He had match point and he didn't win. And I've seen this before. I saw this in 2012 after Andy Murray won the Open. He went out to Shanghai, got Djokovic in the final in Shanghai. He had he was serving for the match and he couldn't finish Djokovic off there. And Djokovic eventually won that Masters event, which kind of, after Murray getting to the top of the mountain, suggested that, yeah, Djokovic has still got life in him. And I think that's a bit of what we saw here in Cincinnati last night, is Alcaraz was a little bit naive going head-to-head with Djokovic the way he did. And then the fact that he lost that match it's going to be another mental mountain for him to climb if they face each other in New York in the final, because he now knows that he doesn't quite have Djokovic's number the way he thought he did after Wimbledon. And in fact, Djokovic has proven that he's still able to compete and he's not going to be second favorite.
Nope, he sure isn't. I think that Alcaraz is still very young. I would have went out there and tried to bury the guy. That's what I would have wanted to do. Send him a message. That French Open victory was a fluke, is what I want, would be the message that I would love to send. But he didn't do that. He had the match. I think if you look at the stats, I haven't looked at them yet because I'm still absorbing that great tennis we saw. I think that the stat sheet shows that Carlos probably did win the match. But the problem when you see Djokovic, and he okey-doked him too. He's done this a million times. He goes off the court between the second and third set, changed his clothes again, took advantage of a dark area in the rules. He was walking around in the second set, remember, like a zombie. And all of a sudden he turns it on. He gets this special drink and he turns it on and game over. And that was an interesting dynamic. But Carlos is still the favorite to win the U.S. Open. I don't think it's going to be much longer. Does he win it, though? Is he worth it? Because I think his number is pretty low, actually, to win it. Yeah, it's $1.50. 1.5 to 1 for him to win the U.S. Open. Do you even take a chance at something like that? I'm sorry, Novak Djokovic is now the favorite to win this tournament at 1.2 to 1.
Well, yeah, you know, that's probably last night swung things around a little bit. I thought Carlos Alcaraz was actually playing a lot better in return than Djokovic was, but unfortunately, it just didn't last over the three sets, and Djokovic was able to claw his way back in. So stats wise, I think you're right. If you look at the stats of the match, you'll find that Carlos Alcaraz was probably favorable. I think he had, you know, about a dozen aces in there as well. It's the way tennis is played, right? It's the format of the games and the sets. You can be the better player overall, but you don't necessarily win the match, unfortunately. I think, yeah, in a longer match, it probably does favor Alcaraz. If you think about it, it'll even out a little bit more over a longer match, and Alcaraz maybe will prevail. But does Alcaraz get to the final is the question. There's a number of people been knocking on the door, and over the last week, there's a few people have run him close. I just wonder the accumulation of the matches, getting to this stage in the season, there's going to be a little bit of fatigue in there. If somebody comes in fresh and he doesn't get a good draw, I think he might not even make the final. I've got this funny feeling that it's not going to be Alcaraz in the final.
Now, that very well could be, but we don't have the draw. We'll have to wait and see. No one's talking about Daniil Medvedev. He's a former champion. 7-1 odds to win the U.S. Open. What about Medvedev?
He's another one. He's been so hot and cold recently. Like, when he's on, he looks incredible. But he came up against Alexander Zverev last week, and they had a bit of a battle. They had a three sets battle there. But, they've got, I think, like, Medvedev leads their head-to-head like 9-7, but it's been damn close. It's been really, really close. Like, Medvedev's dominated over the last couple of years, but Zverev actually is looking better. He's come back from that injury, and he looks really, really solid. He gave it a decent go against Djokovic. He got edged out in a tiebreak and then 7-5 in the second set. But if I was going to play an outsider, I would probably play Zverev before I played Medvedev at the minute. Medvedev just, he just doesn't look like the same guy that won the US Open and was taking it to Djokovic. You know, when he went down to Australia and he had that, I think it was the final down there, he played Djokovic, or it may have been Nadal, and he didn't win that one.
Mm-hmm.
He's never been the same player since. He's never been the guy that looks like he's going to, you know, cut someone's throat to win it. He just looks kind of like he's a step short. And maybe, yeah, there's a few players who've done that. You know yourself, there's guys who win a slam and they don't win another one. They've got their success and they're happy with it. And Medvedev kind of looks like one of those. Like he needs to find another 10% somewhere if he wants to get back into the winner's circle at the big events.
I think Medvedev's the victim of this whole war thing. You know, he goes around everywhere he goes. It's like he's a war criminal. That has to take its toll. I don't think he cares that much, but maybe he cares more than he lets on. I don't have any love for Medvedev to win. I don't think Zverev. I like Zverev. I think someone who definitely could win. I'm not so sure he will, but he sure played good in Toronto as Jannik Sinner. He looked good too. His coaching change with Darren Cahill has made a big improvement in his game. He looked very confident. He didn't have any of that shenanigans, you know, no tweeners, no silliness. And his serve, his semifinal, I watched the full semifinal in Toronto, and his serve was money the whole day. And I think that if you have that kind of combination and have a distraction-free Fortnite, you could, Jannik Sinner could win this event.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be doing the model shoots while he's in New York. I think he's very much there for business.
Well, let's hope, because that's what they usually do there. That's when they do most of that stuff, and you know this better than anybody, during the U.S. Open. They're in New York, too. But that should be interesting. Tommy Paul's had a great summer. He's been able to slap Alcaraz around a little bit. He's a hard matchup for Carlos Alcaraz because they're kind of identical. They're both fast. They get every ball back. They can serve well when they need to. They volley pretty well when they need to. Tommy Paul is a 13,000 favorite. Let's put it this way. Tommy Paul is ranked, his odds to win the U.S. Open are lower than Taylor Fritz, Matteo Berrettini, TFO, Rublev, Herk Kax, FAA, Korda, a whole bunch. Andy Murray has higher odds than Tommy Paul to win the U.S. Open. Do people pay attention to tennis? This is a hell of a good price for Tommy Paul to win the U.S. Open, Craig.
This is a great price. I mean, are you looking at TFO and thinking this dude's going to win the U.S. Open?
No.
Like, you know, you're not even looking at TFO and thinking he's going to get to the quarterfinals.
Or pass the first round.
The way he's playing, the way he played against Stan Wawrinka last week, he wouldn't get past the first round. And Stan Wawrinka's another guy who's on his way out. You know, he's won three slams, great career, but he's at the end of that career. Tommy Paul's winning matches. He's winning matches every week. He's winning matches against top players. I like Tommy Paul. I like the price that you're getting on Tommy Paul. I mean, how can Andy Murray be a lower price, a less attractive price than Tommy Paul? I mean, Andy Murray's a guy who he might win a couple of matches, but he ain't going to win the US Open. I mean, he should be getting 1,000 to 1 on Andy Murray. He's not going to win the US Open. I don't know what's skewing those odds, but Tommy Paul, that's a really good price. I would definitely be considering, if I was playing someone with an outside shout, to play Tommy Paul. I might also look at this Hubert Hurkacz. Yep. He gave Carlos Alcaraz a bit of a scare last week as well. He had that big serve booming in the early part of the match. If he can get that consistency and that serve keeps going, I think it's a really difficult serve to return. Like, you've got to be on your return game. Otherwise, you might not see a lot of the ball in court on return. And if you have a couple of sloppy serve games, which Alcaraz can have, he can have a serve game every now and then where he just gives up a break quite cheaply. You can find yourself out to someone like Hubert Hurkacz if he's on the way that he is. I mean, he's got no return game. It's a bit like playing John Isner back in the day, but he can be dangerous because if you can't break the serve, he can cause you all sorts of problems.
Well, his return game has gotten better, as have his ground strokes, but he's a tall guy, but he's another one that can turn your lights out. You know, he doesn't worry about missing returns. He's there. He's going to serve. He volleys well. He reads the court well. And like I said, his ground strokes have gotten better. He's on my short list for outside dark horses. You know who else is? Alex DeMenor. Now, I'm not so sure how he's going to fare in New York City. But this is the type of surface, a bouncy surface, that he could cause all kinds of trouble for people. And he could be a very good underdog in the first week of the event, depending on the draw, Craig. Alex DeMenor is a 65-1 long shot to win the U.S. Open. But he has got better odds than Tommy Paul.
Yeah, he's definitely one for the first week. I think he lost to Monfils last week, but he had a win over JJ Wolf. He's such a fighter, DeMenor. He kind of reminds me of the old sort of David Ferrer. Like he's really annoying. He's never going to go away. He doesn't have anything spectacular about his game, but it's frustrating, and he's going to get a lot of balls back. So definitely for the first week, let's see who he draws early on, and we'll take it from there. We'll bring you that when we get the draw.
Absolutely. No one's talking about Taylor Fritz. He's had a good summer.
He's another one that goes in the tier four bracket. He's better than tier four, but when I saw him play Djokovic and he lost the first set 6-love, I thought, that's psychologically damaging ahead of the US Open as well, is to come out and not be competitive. He got better in the second set. He did really well in the second set, actually. He lost 6-4, but he's had those big wins over certain people at slams, but he doesn't get the second win after he gets a big win. And that's where it's going to be for Taylor Fritz, is that can he go to a slam and can he beat Djokovic, then Alcaraz, or can he beat Nadal, then Alcaraz, or Medvedev, then Djokovic? You know, that's kind of the questions you're asking. He seems to be able to put together a huge performance to do the first part, and then he comes out and he doesn't have it in him to deliver in the second part. So it's a hurdle he's going to have to try and find his way across if we're going to take him serious and he wants to win this US Open. It's going to be down to the draw again, isn't it? If he lands in a position and it's a nice part of the draw and he gets into that second week, he lost in the first round last year, by the way, but if he gets into the second week and he's up against someone he's favorable against in the quarterfinals and he gets into that semi, I think that's where you're going to ask the questions. Can you win the semi and then the final? It'll be a huge ask for Taylor Fritz.
It'll be a huge ask for him. You know what? He's one of those guys. He'll be in there quarterfinals. He'll work hard to get there. But for whatever reason, he just can't get over the hump. It is what it is. I have one more name on my list, an American name, Brandon Nakashima. He doesn't have as good of odds as Tommy Paul, nor should he. Two summers ago, we were talking about Brandon Nakashima as a potential U.S. Open winner, and he has struggled mightily this year. No shot at all, does he? He would probably be someone I would look to pick on in the first round if he's a favorite.
He's probably looking at getting to the second round this year as an achievement. It's not really come together for him, has it? I think I saw him, was it a few weeks back, I saw him playing against Andy Murray or something like that, and he struggled with that as well.
Yeah, he struggles with a lot of things these days.
But it's kind of crazy, because when we saw him, I'll tell you who it was. It was last week he played Stan Wawrinka in the first round, and I backed him to beat Wawrinka because I thought the price was quite good, and he lost in three sets to Wawrinka, which was, it was disappointing. I think I was right, though. He did play, he played Murray in Washington. He lost there. He lost first round in Toronto as well. He lost first round obviously in Cincinnati. So he's playing Winston-Salem this week, and he has won his first match. So he's obviously trying to play his way back into form ahead of the US Open. But it's been disappointing, hasn't it?
No. I never thought that much of him to begin with.
No, I thought he would be a guy who could maybe get to the second week, but
no. You know what the problem is? He doesn't do anything different than anyone else or better than anyone else. You know, it's easy when no one knows who you are. Once that tape gets out on you, it's over. You better either improve or hit the door. He didn't do that. Guys like Tommy Paul, he's improved a lot. You know, in Brandon hasn't. In my opinion, maybe it's more mental than anything, who knows, but he'll be someone that I'll look to pick on early in the tournament. Is there anyone else before we let this thing go and get ready for the US Open next week, Craig?
We're going to talk about Stefanos, or have we given up on that?
I've given up on that. I think he's just happy with his life. He's number four in the world. He has the game to win the US Open. Is he mentally there? I don't know. He hasn't done much with his team. He still has the same one. It'll probably continue. And as long as that does continue, he's basically on his own. And I don't think that his tennis IQ is high enough for him to win on his own. I think he would need an injection of a Brad Gilbert-type coach to come in there, tell the father to go away, and sit back and watch and text his buddies about the match. Or whatever, and call it a day. But that's not going to happen anytime soon, if at all. So until then, he's a guy who could either win the first round or lose the first round. That's all.
Felix?
No. You know, I'm glad that you brought Felix up. You know, the tennis world loves to see champions that are unique. And a lot of folks thought it was going to be FAA. Now, we talked about him 2 years ago. I didn't think much of him then. But mostly, though, what I think of him is I think he's an uber-talented kid who just doesn't want to compete. He's so used to people laying down for him, being the fan favorite. You know, it's a lot easier when you fly into countries where you know no one outside of your tennis world and have the crowd on your side no matter where you go. Well, that doesn't happen anymore for Felix. So now he's got to gut it out there on his own. And he just is inconsistent. He just looks like a kid who came from juniors, and this is not true because he's obviously had success as a pro, but who came from a junior situation where everyone laid down for him, and now he doesn't know how to win when they don't or when they stop laying down for him. Or when they stop becoming intimidated by his game. And I think that that's what's happened with Felix. And I don't see Felix doing anything except going out in the first or second round. He's got a shitload of points to defend. And I don't think he's going to be able to do it. And that's sad, but that's just the way tennis is.
Yeah, okay. No, that's fair enough. Obviously, the only other ones I would look at are what I call the two clay court guys from Scandinavia. You've got Holger Rune and Casper Ruud, but I honestly don't fancy either of these guys.
No.
Rune's not won a match since Wimbledon.
Plus, he's hurt.
Yeah, I wondered whether he was hurt when he was playing against McDonald last week, because he went down 6-4 2-love in the tired, and I thought, is it serious or is it just he's out of form and he wants to get hell off of that court? But I did wonder, like, is it a serious one, and is he going to miss the US Open? There's not been a lot of news on it, so
he'll probably miss. I shouldn't say that. I think he'll show up because that's a big paycheck. And he's still in that frame. We'll see with him. Casper Ruud, I think this is the surface where he could move and make a move. I thought that would be the case in Cincinnati. I remember texting you about that. I just don't think it's going to happen for him. I think he's a clay court guy. I think he's enjoying his life, and why shouldn't he, you know? So he sees all the pressure for everybody else. No one's talking about him. He's He got to the final last year. He's another one with a lot of points to defend. He's already taken a tumble outside the top five. We'll have to wait and see. Anyone else, Craig?
I'd have to go right down the list to look for someone. We've pretty much talked about most of the top 10. We're probably
Ben Shelton. You know what? Ben Shelton's here. He has better odds than Tommy Paul also. He's exciting to watch, but I think the toll of being out on the tour for his first year, he didn't play international juniors. His father didn't let him leave the country. I think that was smart, but, it's been a long year for him. Now he's doing podcasts and he's doing TV things with Tennis Channel. And that's another thing. You get so many of these distractions. You know, I get why Jensen Brooksby is in the booth because his wrist is shot and he's probably cooked. But I don't understand why a Ben Shelton would want to even be bothered with a podcast with Francis Tiafoe and Chris Eubanks. I mean, I get the whole thing. But from a marketing standpoint, I'm sure the USTA loves it. But those are distractions you don't need. And I think he's distracted. I think he's exhausted. He might get a jolt from the US Open crowd, depending on what time of day he plays. But I don't have much. I don't see him doing anything, at least this year.
No, it's going to be really difficult for him this year. As you said, he's got other things that seem to be going on outside the court that, yeah, probably are not the most well advised things. If I wanted to throw one more name in there, it's a real outside bet, really young guy, 19 years old, but Luca Van Asch, Frenchman. He's sort of mid-60s in the rankings. He's 19 years old. He's only 5'10", so it's not a big booming serve that he's got, but he's got a little bit of fight about him. I think he's going to turn into quite an interesting player. Watched him earlier in the season playing out in Hamburg, and he had a really good run at Eastbourne on the grass where he eventually lost to JJ Wolf. So I think he could be quite an interesting player coming into this US Open. You know, I'm not talking about playing to win. I'm talking about let's have a look at this guy in the first round. He gets a good draw, you can make some money because you're going to get a good price on this guy if he gets a good draw. Certainly like one of the sort of young stars that I'm looking at and thinking, if he comes in here, he gets a favorable draw where I'm getting good money, that's going to be one that I'm definitely looking to play early on. But no, I don't see anyone else on that list. You know, I, as I said, like right at the start of the podcast, there's only really three or four guys you can see winning this. And for the most part, they're the top three guys on the rankings, maybe Zverev, maybe Sinner. But other than that, you don't look at Taylor Fritz or Francis Tiafoe and think there's a winner there. You just don't. You don't go, yeah, that guy's got it. He's... I'm going to put $100 on that guy to win it today. It's just not happening. It's they're too far away at the minute from the top guys.
Nope, I happen to agree. Man, great stuff today, Craig. We will be back next week right before the US Open. We'll figure out how to do this. The time zone for the draw on Friday is difficult for us. But we'll try to have something up there for Monday morning. If not, I'll have stuff written probably at bettingnewjersey.com. For Craig Doyle, I'm Phil Nasons. Thanks for listening to This Week in Tennis.
This Week in Tennis.